You are listening to 3CR's Disability Day broadcast for 2025. My name is Caitlin Blythe. Good afternoon. You are listening to Chronically Online Friendship. That's right. For the next hour, I'm going to be here with you talking about friendship, why it's difficult, why ableism complicates it, how disabled people use online communities to find each other and to connect, and how disability, unfortunately, can impact the level of social isolation in our lives. So thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to start you off with a great song. We've got something here. Let me find it. This is a great one. Neurodivergent artist Montaigne with It's All About the Money here on 3CR 855 AM or 3cr.org.au. Happy independent, happy International Disability Day, people with disability. Haven't you heard? It's all about the money. This Disability Day 2025. Hi, my name is Caitlin Blythe, and you're listening to 3CR 855 AM on your dial, or 3cr.org.au if you're listening online. And it's Disabled Christmas. Today is the 3rd of December, International Day of People with Disabilities, and that means, in my opinion, give a disabled person money today. Give lots of disabled people money. If you're not disabled, find a disabled person, give them some money, because it's Disabled Christmas and we deserve presents. You're listening to Chronically Online Friendship. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about friendship, social isolation, disability, chronic illness, and how disabled people use online spaces to connect. Coming up, I'm going to be talking to a disabled TikToker and an Instagram creator, talking about their experiences of social isolation and chronic illness. Later, I'm going to be talking to a teenager about the social media ban. Nothing makes me sound older than saying I'm going to be speaking to a teenager. And then coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to be speaking in live in studio to Artemis Munoz, who's coming in to talk about their new show, too. Very exciting show, absolutely stacked. And I just wanted to say, before we get to the first interview, what does it mean to be chronically online? If you're not familiar with that phrase, it's something that's thrown around online quite a bit, maybe when someone is seen to be caring too much about something that's maybe not relevant in the real world, according to somebody. So it's like, they'll say, you're being chronically online, you're too, you know, trapped in the discourse, or you need to go touch grass. And unfortunately, some of us only have access to social, to the world and to social networks online. So some of us are also chronically ill. Calling us chronically online can feel a bit problematic. So that's why I'm here today to talk about Chronically Online Friendship for 3CR special 2025 Disability Day broadcast. Very cool broadcast, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., all disabled, all day for Disabled Christmas. And now I've got a couple of interviews with some young disabled content creators in their 20s, making videos on TikTok and Instagram, talking about their chronic illnesses and how their disabilities impact their social lives. And we've got that coming up. So first, we're going to hear from two disabled TikTok and Instagram creators here on 3CR 855 AM or 3cr.org.au. Hello to people streaming online. You're listening to Chronically Online Friendship with Caitlin Blythe. Jay Morgan is a TikTok creator who makes videos about life on the disability support pension and the social isolation that comes with their disabilities.
If I didn't have social media, I would very much be completely isolated and alone. I mean, quite often the only time that I actually talk in a day is when I film videos to post on my social media platform. And the only time that I interact with other people in a day is when I'm responding to comments on the videos that I post on my social media platforms. So if I didn't have social media, I would very much be spending every day just completely alone with no one to talk to and no form of social interaction whatsoever.
About a month ago, Jay, or J_Morgan16X on TikTok and Instagram, posted a video from their couch, propped up on a pillow with a blanket pulled up, speaking honestly about their experience of severe long-term social isolation.
This video doesn't really have a point. I just wanted to voice some of the things that I'm struggling with right now, because I know that I'm not the only one, and there are other people watching this who are in a similar situation to me. Most of the time, I'm fine with it, but every so often, it just really gets to me. Like, I'll hear someone say something, or I'll see a post, or see something happen out in public, and it will just, like, click in my mind that I am completely and utterly alone. And I feel like there are so many realities of long-term social isolation that people just don't really understand. You know, it's been a very long time since someone just asked me how my day was. It's been a long time since I've had a hug from anyone. I mean, I shook someone's hand a few weeks ago and I was actually surprised by how warm it felt because I've genuinely forgotten what it feels like to touch another person because I go so long without any form of physical contact whatsoever.
Under this vulnerable video, a commenter named Claire replied, "Oh my God, go get a job, get a hobby, join a group and stop whinging." This is the tenor of a lot of comments under Jay's TikToks. Strident and suspicious internet users, sure that Jay is just refusing to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. We live in an ableist society, and that affects us structurally, like literally not being able to get into a building because it wasn't built with disabled people in mind. But it also affects our interpersonal relationships. Many chronically ill people, myself included, have seen big drop-offs in friendships when our disabilities disable us. People, family members and partners included, often run out of patience for our symptoms or access needs. Jay lives with multiple disabilities, including ME/CFS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS, autism, and ADHD. When you have energy-limiting chronic illnesses, it can be difficult to even hold your head up or look at a screen, to shower or feed yourself, let alone go out and meet up with friends.
The biggest barrier to having a social life for me are absolutely just the ways that my disabilities impact my ability to function. My disabilities are incredibly energy limiting, so I really only have an hour or two of energy a day to do everything that I need to do to survive. I also have a lot of chronic pain, which makes it really hard to interact with people and concentrate on what another person is saying. And then you have things like being autistic, which impact the way that I socialize and how I communicate with other people. And people aren't always understanding of that. People aren't always accepting of my disabilities and the way they impact me. So that can make it really hard to really connect with people when they perceive what I'm doing as being rude or wrong or just socially incorrect.
I asked Jay, in an ideal world, what would their social life look like?
Because I am predominantly housebound with my disabilities, I think my ideal social life is a bit different to what most other people's would be. I would never really be able to achieve being able to go on regular coffee dates or walks with friends. So for me, it would more be having people that I can talk to, like via text or messenger day to day. And also having people who are willing to come over to my house and just hang out, like get a pizza, watch a movie, some sort of low energy activity that I can do despite my disabilities that would still allow me to spend time with people in person.
With a condition like myalgic encephalomyelitis, which both Jay and I have, even if you have people who want to come and spend time with you, the illness can make it painful to tolerate other people even being in the same room as you.
I have friends who would be happy to hang out with me quietly. I just can't tolerate it. And so it means I spend most of my day completely alone in my room. I can't tolerate anything else.
22-year-old American student Aditi became chronically ill a year and a half ago in their second year of college and are now bedbound with severe ME.
Not being able to tolerate human presence with ME is a symptom that impacts people so much. There's the obvious problem of it being lonely and people not understanding it, but it also impacts me in ways like I struggle to ask for help with very basic things, like food and water, because I know that I can't tolerate having someone in the room with me for even that short of a time. Or people stay and then I start feeling the physical pain or discomfort, and then they leave and I breathe this huge sigh of relief. And then I feel really bad because it's like, what kind of person is that relieved to see someone they love leave, you know?
Aditi recently started their Instagram page, Aditi's Room, to document their illness journey. Their pinned post reflects that since becoming chronically ill, they've lost friends, future plans, hobbies, and their identity. Their videos talk about the impact of their chronic illnesses on their life.
I probably shouldn't be saying this as a disability advocate, but I'm gonna say it anyways. I feel like having a disability forced me to lower my standards for my platonic, romantic, whatever relationships. If I was healthy and multiple close friends ghosted me during the hardest time of my life, that would be a problem. If I was dating someone who didn't do anything for my birthday, that could be a problem. You catch my drift, just like clear no-nos. But now, given the support needs that I have, it feels like it would be asking too much for someone to learn about and accommodate my disability and also be nice to me in the ways that I would have wanted when I was healthy. It was always hard for me to make friends, and now I'm bedbound, so all social interaction is very prized for me. And so this puts me in this unbalanced power dynamic in all of my relationships.
I asked Aditi what their ideal social life would look like now, what kinds of friendships they're looking for.
Well, to be so honest, my illness is currently in a place where even texting can feel like a lot. So no amount of ideal scenarios or accommodation could really help me socialize right now. But to answer your question, I think an ideal friend would understand the level of loss that I'm going through. Whether it's they knew me when I was healthy and know me now and can see how much has changed, or they're disabled themselves or they've watched someone else go through the process. I think them understanding that grief and that loss is very important to me.
The biggest thing that I wish people understood about social isolation for disabled people is that it's not a choice and it's not something that's easily fixed. We often can't just go get a job or get a really social hobby or join a social group or a social activity. There are a lot of barriers that make that really difficult, not only lack of physical accessibility, but also the financial requirements for doing things like getting a hobby or joining a group. If you're on disability pension, which is on the poverty line, it can be really hard to afford those things. Also, just lack of understanding from people and your peers when it comes to disability, especially for those of us who are young and disabled. It can be really hard to find people our age who really understand what it's like to have a disability, to not have good health, and for your life to be impacted by those things. So it's often not just a simple fix of going out into the world and making friends. There are a lot of things that make that really difficult for us and mean that we often can't have a social life, even if we really want to.
Listening to 3CR's Disability Day broadcast for 2025. My name is Caitlin Blythe, and I'm here with Artemis Munoz in the office, the studio. I know what words are. Art, hello.
Hello.
We've got Art in to talk about their show too, which we're going to chat about in just a second. But you just heard Jay Morgan performing a song that they've teased on their TikTok account. That is Jay Morgan, a disabled TikToker who talks about their social isolation due to chronic illness. Had a great interview with them and also with Aditi from the US talking about their experiences. Really grateful to both of them for giving their precious time and energy to this show, which is Chronically Online Friendship. That's right. Until 5 o'clock today, we're here talking about Chronically Online Friendship, the ways that disability, friendship, and online intersect. And Jay has teased that song on their TikTok account, and I'm hoping that eventually we'll get the full song and, hey, maybe a whole album. That would be great. You can follow Jay on Instagram and TikTok at J_Morgan16X, and you can follow Aditi at Aditi's Room on Instagram. And if after listening to that story, you feel like you would like to do something about the state of ME/CFS treatment and care and stigma for people in Australia, you can always support Emerge. Emerge is the peak body of advocacy for people with ME/CFS, myalgic encephalomyelitis, /chronic fatigue syndrome. It's hard to say because I have it, you know, like I'm tired. You can go to emerge.org.au if you want to find some resources. And when we come back after the break, we'll be chatting with Artemis about their new show too, which is very exciting, here on 3CR 855 AM.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the apartheid-free zone movement.
That's right. You're listening to 3CR. You're here on Chronically Online Friendship with Caitlin Blythe. Hello. Here until 5 p.m. for the Disability Day broadcast on Disabled Christmas, 3rd of December, best day of the year. Give a disabled person money today. And I'm here with a disabled person. I'm here with Artemis Moon. Oh, God. I'm going to fuck up
Munoz.
Your...
Munoz. It's Munoz.
I was so way off. I'm so sorry about that.
That's
Munoz.
Okay.
Artemis Munoz is here with me in studio today. Very exciting because up until this point, we've only been friends online.
Yeah.
God, it's perfect. It's on brand.
I fully hadn't clocked that we hadn't met in person.
I know. I mean, that's something where people say like online isn't real, but it's like a lot of my friendships kind of only happen online, or a lot, not just friendships, acquaintanceships, work, co-work, mm-hmm. organizing.
Absolutely. Yes.
And we actually know each other from working on the disability committee in Rahu, the Renters and Housing Union.
Yeah.
So this is very cool, but you're also an artist.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
I do too many things and it's not good for me. But
don't worry, I think that's probably coming up a lot throughout this broadcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you finding it, you know, being disabled and also being a theatre maker?
Honestly, I think the hardest part is the arts kind of expects you to do a new thing every year.
Yeah.
And there really isn't much like space for making art slowly or things like that, which I think I just straight up need to do. Like this show I was writing 2021.
And this show is called Two.
It's called Two.
T-W-O.
Yes. It took more than 2 years to make. That's for sure.
You built that in for yourself, though.
Yeah.
You were like, this is going to take two.
But yeah, it's just, it is a pattern I see where, yeah, people are expecting a lot of output from artists for them to stay relevant, for us to stay relevant. I love how I remove myself from that group of artists in my head.
We'll work on that later in this therapy session.
And so that's, it's hard. It's hard to balance like constant deadlines. Like when I was fully freelance, basically my full-time job was applying for grants, and then I'd get one of them and it would, you know, give me enough money to live off, you know. But it was a lot of work. It's a lot of work to just get something up, or you have to have a lot of privileges from elsewhere if you're not gonna put in a lot of work. But
absolutely. I mean, I think even like, you know, with the privileges, it's I can see what you're saying. It's like, you know, a lot of people do seem to rise to the top in the arts, especially in Australia, because they have family money, or they able-bodied, they have the energy to constantly grind, or they have a partner supporting them at home, so that the home life is always taken care of. That, you know, it's hard to make it as a you know, just speaking for no one in particular, me, a chronically ill disabled person, energy limited, can't get into a lot of venues physically. And also now these days, you know, I need to be COVID cautious, which we are both masked up in the studio here today, and we've got the air purifier running and everything. And, you know, it's just so rare, really. So it there's all these extra barriers. And also, I mean, on the DSP, you're basically on the poverty line. So lots of barriers to making art.
Yeah, I'm not on the DSP, but I am on the NDIS. And so having that support has probably been the difference between me, you know, having to give this up years ago, or being where I am now, where I'm maybe only going to give it up next year. No.
We're always like 6 months from giving it up, right? Oh, no, gosh. I feel the same. Like, I don't have NDIS support, but if I didn't have the DSP, I don't think I would be doing half the projects. And I don't even feel like I do that much.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, every year I'm like, if I get something done this year other than just survive, then I'm killing it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah. I do find that, you know, since the COVID lockdowns and the sort of rise of Zoom and online spaces, that there has been a little bit more accessibility for, you know, me personally being mostly housebound. I was wondering what your experience is there.
I mean, I think the one thing that I'm always really good at is just showing up. And that is a lot easier to do when it's online, so I can show up to more things. And I find it a lot harder to, like, manage myself in my own time. So being able to, like, jump on a Zoom call with someone and work things out together, and take the pressure off both of us. We have to find a library to meet at, and then a
true
quiet booth, or blah, 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 blah. I think that's helped so much. I actually mentioned NDIS and my support. But my support worker and I meet online mostly, because I am, like I said, trying to do too much with my one little life. And sometimes the only way I get support to do the life admin things that need doing, or the arts admin things that I need to do, is by, having those sessions be like immediately after I finish my work call earlier in the day. And so if I had to factor travel into that as well. I also struggle with travel.
Yeah.
A lot. I have a tic disorder. It's very anxiety inducing for me to be on public transport, because I don't necessarily know what I'm going to end up saying and if I'm going to end up picking a fight with the wrong person by accident.
Yeah.
I still do it because I need to get around sometimes, and I can't drive or anything like that. But
yeah, gotta get around.
It is a degree of stress. So yeah, the more I can meet with people online, I guess, the more it allows me to actually do things.
Yeah. Actually, Tilda Joy produced a show earlier today about disability access and public transport, which is very interesting, but a topic that affects almost all of us, I think. If you don't have the privilege to have a car and a driver's license and the reliable ability to drive. But yeah, you know, you got to get on those trams sometimes, and you don't know who else is going to be on there and if you're going to get harassed that day.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So tell us about your, hard left turn, but tell us about your show too.
So I started writing for my theatre masters that I did back in 2021.
No, say it with pride.
My theatre masters that I did back in 2021. I don't know.
Brilliant.
I basically had in the back of my head for ages this weird idea. Sorry, I should say what it's about. It's about a non-binary person. They are pregnant and they are dealing with mostly their mother being kind of shit about both their ability to be pregnant and be non-binary, and also excessively wanting to gender their unborn child. It's like a dark comedy with like messy, complicated queer characters that are often doing more harm than good. And I sort of, it sprang out of this moment where I had my sister complain to me about this friend of hers who was having twins, and a baby shower was coming up, and she was swearing, like, now I have to buy twice the gifts. That's ridiculous. And
I hadn't thought of that.
And so I sort of mashed up, like, that non-binary experience with that hilarious thought from my sister, and I was like, well, this character is now going to be pretending to have twins and say they're different genders, so people, you know, just fall into using they them pronouns and blah blah blah, and they get twice the stuff. And it was a whole idea. I don't think it necessarily turned out as broadly farcical as that, because it's actually you know, to lean into the disability side of discussion, it's largely exploring like family and the way we carry our like trauma and how much we want to like pass it down to the next generation and stuff like that. But also, yeah, like I said, it is a dark comedy. So yeah, it's an interesting play. I have an amazing team helping me pull it together. And I'm just so excited for everyone to get to see their work.
And yours.
Well, yeah, mine too. But yeah, I've directed things before, but never on the scale of this. And it's just been so lovely for me to get to, I guess, shape a process, not just a project. Like, I've been involved in shows where people have gotten really hurt, and I said from the very beginning that, like, the team matters more than the show. And I'm glad, at least from my perspective, it seems like people are appreciating that emphasis on them, especially because it's been a pretty tight process to pull it all together.
So people got hurt on these other shows, like, physically?
Sometimes emotionally.
Yeah.
Like, the arts is not very accessible.
No.
And I've seen shows where, people's needs were just brushed over. I probably will make mistakes. I definitely have made mistakes, but, it's just about, yeah, where I'm putting my priorities and my focus, and really hoping that people do believe that they come first. And I actually think I'm doing my day job is as an access advisor for arts and events and stuff like that. And I don't actually think I'm necessarily doing access for audiences at the highest standard I could.
Mm.
But I would rather prioritize the people I'm working with first and then nail that stuff, rather than the other way around, you know?
I mean, you're listening to 3CR, by the way. You're listening to Chronically Online Friendship, the show. We're here until 5 p.m. with me, Caitlin Blythe, for the Disability Day broadcast, talking about disability online and friendship. And I'm here with Artemis, who's talking about their new show, too, which I'm very excited to see. Can you tell us when it's coming out and where people can see it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be on TheatreWorks from the 10th of December through to the 20th of December, TheatreWorks in St. Kilda. We are having a masked audience show on Thursday, the 18th of December.
I'll put that in my diary.
And I think Friday, the 19th, we're doing an audio described show. I've got to double check this, but those are the dates I have in my head.
Fantastic.
Very excited to let people see the work that folks have done.
I often find it interesting that it's the independent artists and people making stuff on a shoestring that often tend to innovate access or even just try to make things accessible. Whereas the big theater companies, I'm not having to go at anyone because I don't know anything about it, but, you know, it just feels like there's these big companies that have the budget that maybe don't prioritize, say, COVID cautiousness or consciousness or accessibility. And, you know, it's often seen as like a nice to have or completely unnecessary. And things like Auslan interpretation and audio describing. I think Auslan interpretation is becoming a little bit more, they'll often be like one signed show.
Yeah. But I specifically decided not to do a signed show for this work because...
Oh, that's interesting.
This is the first promotion I'm doing for this show at all. I'm
breaking,
overstretching myself in terms of like my things that I'm doing. I felt like it was more an exercise in patting myself on the back if I booked in an Auslan show and then didn't actually do the work to engage deaf community.
Right.
So what I'm doing instead is I am filming the show, and I want to get that an Auslan translation of that made. That's not done yet. So it's not a sure thing, but it's intent.
Yeah.
And I felt like that felt better to me than just booking in a thing without actually having done the work, because I haven't done the work, and that's okay.
That's such a good point to make, because I guess that's coming back to what I was saying before about people who have the budget but don't try.
Yeah.
And like, often it's just like a box ticking exercise. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes I'll be trying to attend something and I'll be told, oh, well, we're doing like one thing in the one ground level thing, that you could come to that one show in one afternoon or something. And it's like, okay, I know that you don't really want my money. you don't really want my eyeballs or, you know, my attendance, but, I'm so interested by what artists like you are doing, where you're really trying to lead with a more, like, what's the word? Like, I don't know about, is organic the right word? But you're really trying to, like, lead with intent and actually not just tick boxes, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, I absolutely could, you know, you can throw money at all of these services and they'll take it and then they'll show up. But it's it's more like, yeah, like, the purpose of this for me is getting people to experience the art. And so it's a real balancing act sometimes. But I think with that being the focus, it's like, yeah, how can we invite people in? And I think, yeah, that's how I've decided to do it this time. It might be a mistake. Who knows? but we're trying. And that's all we can do.
I think, you know, the next few years are going to see a lot of really exciting innovations on, like you said, you're filming your show, and we're going to see ways that we can include people using digital platforms as well.
Absolutely.
And make theater more accessible. So,
absolutely.
So exciting. Artemis, thank you so much for coming in. It's so nice to talk to you.
Likewise.
Thanks for coming in on Disability Day on Disabled Christmas, especially when you're already stretched so thin. So really appreciate your time. You're listening to Chronically Online Friendship on 3CR, 855 AM or 3cr.org.au if you're listening online. My name's Caitlin Blythe. I'm going to be here with you until 5 PM talking about disability, online spaces, and friendship. And coming up, I've got an interview with a teenager who's going to be talking about the upcoming social media ban here in so-called Australia and how that's going to affect kids, especially disabled kids who maybe use the internet to connect and find social life. So that's coming up after the break. You're listening to 3CR. And yeah, I'm going to play something now. And now you're listening to 3CR, and here's Hendrix, the 17-year-old that I spoke to earlier this week. Hendrix, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So good to talk to you. So you turned 17 this year. So luckily, when this social media ban comes in, that's not going to affect you. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
What social media platforms do you use the most?
Instagram and Discord are usually my main ones.
And if they were taken away from you in a couple of days, how would you feel about that?
Pretty bad, honestly. Like, I find it pretty hard to, like, I guess adjust to it.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be hard to, like, find a new kind of platform to talk to my friends on.
Yeah. Do you think, because I believe Discord is not going to be included in the ban, but Instagram definitely is. So would you migrate your friendships and group chats over to Discord?
I would, yeah. And, yeah.
Yeah. So. What kind of role does social media play in your social life? Like, if social media was taken away from you tomorrow, would you struggle to stay in touch with your friends?
I think to an extent, yeah, because a lot of the time it's share memes with each other over these platforms, and that's kind of like how I stay in touch a lot of the time. But I think it also it makes me less active in my community as well. Because there's a lot of posts on there about, like different organizations that are like, come to this event that we're hosting, and they'll only post about it on Instagram or something.
Yeah.
So it'd be hard to keep up as well if I didn't have access to that.
Yeah, so Instagram's kind of a source of community news for you as well as talking to people.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know I find information on Instagram, organizing things or just parties, like, you know, social events, and I'm not seeing that it's mainly posted on Instagram or maybe on Discord, and I'm not seeing it. Like, there aren't really websites that just collect information anymore. Like, you can't just go to a static website and find out what's going on, right?
Yeah. So it's all kind of what was the word? Aggregated into these couple of platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of organizations, like social and community organizations, really rely on Instagram to reach out to people as well. And what do you think the impact of the social media ban will be on disabled kids under 16?
I think it will harm the kind of I suppose awareness of like the community, or like I think that will be harder for people to like find information, if that makes sense. Like, I know a lot of stuff that I read online will be like about like disabled. The disabled community on Instagram is like educational stuff, and so if you don't have access to that, then I think it'd be a lot harder to find like a kind of an entryway to that. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but
no, it makes perfect sense to me. What kind
it,
of
it raised the bar for entry a lot, I feel.
Right, so it raises the bar for entry to maybe information about the disability community.
Yeah, since a lot of people like especially if you don't live in like a more kind of if you don't live in like a big city where there's a lot of different like stuff going on, then social media might be like the only way of finding out about stuff like this.
Yeah.
I read that like YouTube is kind of included in the ban as well. And considering that at this point YouTube is pretty much like a just like an educational, well, not strictly, but it has lots of educational content on it.
Yeah.
And not being able to go on there and find certain videos about, not being able to see certain videos about things that might directly involve you might, I think they'd harm people because they won't be able to like learn about it until they're much older.
Right. Like, what kind of things would they be learning about?
Like the different communities and like histories of things as well. Like I've seen a lot of videos about like the like history of the queer community and like history of like Indigenous people and stuff like that, and disabled people because there are some disabled creators on there, who won't be as like visible.
Yeah, I know. I've learned a lot from disability TikTok, disability Instagram. And back in the day, disability Twitter. And have you found that you've met people through social media that you might not have otherwise met?
Yes. I met a good like online friend of mine a couple of years ago just by like randomly messaging him off of like a post we both saw. And now we've been friends for a couple of years. So I definitely would never have met him if not for that kind of online connection, because he lives in an entirely different country, so.
Right. And I know for me growing up, because I didn't have a lot of social media growing up, I didn't have access to just knowledge about other people like me, so I felt very alien as a chronically ill 16-year-old. And also, you know, I didn't know I was neurodivergent, things like that. And connecting even with other people in their late 30s who were late diagnosed neurodivergent on social media has helped me hugely. And it's often anecdotal information that you're not going to get from doctors or from health websites, like from official sources. I don't really have a question. I'm just rambling now. But I just keep thinking about... I guess I'm just so curious, like, about the current teenage experience of being on social media, because I wonder how different my mental health might have been if I'd been able to talk to someone, you know, in America who had the same diagnosis and was more plugged into disability justice activism than I was, say, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah.
And often when you're disabled, you might be a little bit more housebound than other people your age. So you might not be able to go out and find people as easily.
Yeah. And I think that's why the online connection is important as well, because it's a way to stay in touch without when you physically can't be there as well.
You're listening to Chronically Online Friendship on 3CR's Disability Day 2025 broadcast with Caitlin Blythe. We're here until 5 p.m. talking about the intersection of disability, chronic illness, friendship, and the internet. Right now, we're speaking with 17-year-old Hendrix Mulholland, talking about their take on the upcoming social media ban here in so-called Australia. You're listening to 3CR on 8:55 a.m. or 3cr.org.au on the internets. That was so millennial of me. Now back to our interview with Hendrix Mulholland. What do you think the kids will be doing this summer without all these social media sites?
Probably finding a way around it.
Like, yeah. VPNs?
Yeah, or even I saw in the UK they're using like a video game to like a face poser in a video game to get around the face painting thing. So.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so smart. No, I mean, I think it's interesting because the regulations are probably being made by people who aren't as savvy as maybe under 16s are. I wanted to ask, since you would have been, how old were you when the COVID lockdowns were happening?
Oh, I was like, how old was I? I think 12 or 13. Mm. I think I was just turning 13 when really like in the middle of it.
And did social media play a role for you to sort of like stay connected during the lockdowns?
Yes. Like I watched a lot of YouTube. But going back to that like friend I met online before, it was like really I think it was nice talking to him because there's like no like pre-made expectations, I think. And it was less like pressure, like you don't have to physically act a certain way or this way.
What kind of pressures do you feel in like an in-person hangout?
I don't know, like my facial expressions and tone can be hard to judge sometimes, especially when it's people that I don't know as well. So like I am a bit kind of afraid of like saying something and they think I'm being like snarky or like mean about it. And it's just like, no, that's just how I sound. Whereas right. Online, it's kind of a neutral tone, like, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can use tone tags and things like that or emojis or whatever.
Yeah. So it's a lot easier to, like be intentional about the tone you want to do.
Mm. Yeah. And do you find that maybe you can find people that are more on your wavelength as well?
Yeah. Since it's more, like, international, you can find, like specific communities for stuff is very helpful.
Kind of communities have you connected with?
Like online queer communities and stuff, and what else? Online queer communities and video games as well. And just like smaller niche hobbies because they don't require an in person. Like it's a lot easier to find someone who has the same interests when you can just both go to the same place online rather than trying to find someone in person. Yeah.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
So Hendrix, you've been homeschooled, and you mentioned to me that social media has played a role in that.
Yeah, I found it a lot easier to mitigate. I suppose not being at school and not like meeting new people every day, it's easier to mitigate online because you can kind of meet people who also share your interests that way. And find like local events, and I went to like homeschool meetups quite often because we found out about that through like Facebook and stuff during the pandemic. And I think, yeah, that's one way where it really helped kind of social media kind of helped connect me with people.
Have there been any examples of social media negatively impacting your life, like cyberbullying and things like that?
I actually don't think so. I don't think I've ever been cyberbullied, which is kind of strange because I was quite online for a while. But
would you have described yourself as chronically online?
Well, yeah, there's a period about about a year or two where I was like I was just too, like I was just kind of lost in sauce for a bit too long.
What does lost in sauce look like?
It's kind of hard to explain, but it's like, just like, I can't even explain it, sorry. But it's like,
no, yeah. I just, sometimes people online just say to someone, you need to go touch grass. Like, how do you interpret that?
I think sometimes be true. Like, I think there was a point in my life where I just like needed to go out and like do stuff more often as well, because I think sometimes it's easy to get trapped in a loop of like seeing something bad online and then being like, oh, this is so terrible, I can't believe this is happening, and then not going out to try and change something in your community, if that makes sense.
Right,
like if you, and with algorithms and stuff, like you'll see bad stuff, but I think it helps to try and change what you can personally.
Yeah, so kind of
to kind of mitigate that feeling.
Absolutely. So maybe like you see bad things happening online, and then you attend a local protest or you organize in your area to try and mitigate how bad you feel about everything that's happening.
Yeah, yeah, and volunteering at like food banks and stuff. And,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much, Hendrix. We're almost done. I just wanted to ask one last question. Is there anything else you would like our listeners at 3CR to know about the social media ban that's coming up?
That you might want to find a way around it, because I'm not sure how secure your data will be with these companies if they need to like do like a face scan or something. I don't know how safe that is, so you might want to I don't know, find you might have to go on the ground for a couple of years and...
that's great advice. Thank you so much, Hendrix. Yeah. So lovely talking to you.
Yeah it's fun being on here as well.
Thank you for listening to Chronically Online Friendship on 3CR today, 8:55 a.m. on your dial, or 3cr.org.au if you're listening online. My name's Caitlin Blythe. It's been such a pleasure and an honor to be with you here for the last hour on 3CR's Disability Day broadcast. And now we're going to go out with some Alice Skye, a beautiful song called Christmas Don't Come Easy. Thank you for listening, and give a disabled person some money today.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.